This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Mike Florio with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Let's talk some NFL with Mike Florio on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. You can find Mike on Twitter at ProFootballTalk, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Hey, how are you?
Mike, we're good, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking a little bit about the quarterback class and how there's always someone who rises because people get desperate. What's going on with Drake May, though?
Well, what's happening with Drake May, and this is one of the realities of legalized betting on topics that are completely unrelated to performance on the field, because there's always a possibility someone knows things and that inside information then gets misused for betting purposes. So DraftKings has taken May off the board as to any specific bets linking him to a team. But you can still bet on him going second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever. He's the overwhelming favorite to go fifth, which implies the Chargers will trade down with someone. But you can't bet on the someone he may end up with. And the concern, as I understand it, is you get a lot of volatility in the market and the sports book becomes exposed if someone does have inside information and load up at favorable odds that he's going to go to a specific team. They just said, timeout. No team-specific bets, although they still are taking action on the number, the slot that he'll go in. So it's strange, but there has to be some reason that any sports book would turn off the faucet of cash that otherwise flows in, because the house always wins, except when they're afraid they're going to lose. And when they're afraid they're going to lose, that's when they shut off the cash.
Draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. With all of these mentions of the legal sports betting ramifications, what have been the shockwaves through the NFL with the announcement that the NBA, Adam Silver, has banned Jonte Porter permanently with no chance of reinstatement for the betting, the prop bet fixing, we'll call it what it is, that was going on? What does this mean for the NFL and whatever guardrails have to be in place there?
Well, and apparently there was more than just betting on prop bets. I saw a report that he bet on the Raptors to lose at least once. So this is cardinal sin type stuff. That's what Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, called it before this announcement came today. And look, the prop bets are problematic. The NCAA has called for all states with legalized betting to get rid of prop bets. A few states already have. The thing about the prop bet is, you know, one individual player, especially in football, how much can you affect the outcome of a game? Not a whole lot directly, but you can affect your own prop bets. If you're a running back and you've got yardage and reception and touchdown over-unders, and you just are injured on the first drive and you can't continue, all the unders hit. So that's the problem with the prop bet. The other problem with the prop bet too, and I've seen this concern raised as it relates to college athletes, you get a bunch of guys who are constantly harangued and hassled because they're not hitting their overs. How dare you not hit the over? You're my basis for my bet. I need you to get 20.5 points or more. How dare you not do it? So I just think it's too individualized and it's too problematic and it's too tempting for guys to, you know, be involved in whatever scam might come up for them to make a little extra money by, you know, being injured or sick early in a game.
Mike, a little bit of a different discussion when it comes to my question, but it's about the Bears. And they're being applauded today for hiring Ted Cruz as a special advisor to the president and CEO, and he's also the chief administrative officer. That was the title they gave But Cruz has a positive reputation in the league. What do you know about him, and what do you think this means for the team?
Well, when you say Ted Cruz, I think of the senator from Texas.
Not so, Ted Cruz, no.
So
not that
I,
Ted
I
Cruz.
Will, Ted Cruz from the Chiefs?
Yes.
Is that who you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes, yes.
Holy crap.
Oh, good.
I didn't
you're,
know
you
that.
Like this.
I'm stunned because Ted Cruz has been a longtime member of the PR staff with the Kansas City Chiefs, and he is a great guy. He is excellent. And, you know, we see this from time to time where someone from PR, by virtue of being in that job and in the proximity of things that happen in the football operation and the business side, and look, he's been right there with one of the great teams in the NFL the past 5 years. I think that that's great. I love Ted. It's funny. You say Ted Cruz, and I never thought of Ted Cruz as a football guy, but he could be, and he wouldn't be the first one to cross over from PR into doing special things. So I think that's great for the Bears. I love Ted. I had no idea. Yeah, that's news to me, as Jerry Jones would say.
Yeah, the official title special advisor, but I'm sure I would think that he would have a hand in some sort of PR strategy for the team.
Considering some of the changes.
Of stuff. Advisor, you advise on all sorts of stuff. You advise on all sorts of stuff, just like Lloyd Braun to Mayor Dinkins, big advisor.
Mike, since we're kind of talking about politics, what's up with your mans, Aaron Rodgers?
God, where can we start? I don't know. And the podcast that he was on last week, where he had some all-time great over-the-top conspiracy theory stuff. And the thing about Rodgers, you know, everything can't be a conspiracy theory. It's impossible for everything to be something out of the X-Files. And that's not what it seems. And there's lizard people, or there's this, or there's that. It can't all be a conspiracy. And his approach is, I believe, based upon everything I've ever heard him say, is nothing is what it seems. And there's always a conspiracy hiding behind it. And my experience is, it's just too hard to hold a conspiracy together. It takes a high degree of competence to hold a conspiracy together. And I think that he just assumes everything is BS. And if he's right once or twice in his lifetime, then he can thump his chest and claim that he was, you know, right all along. But there's some other stuff too. There's some stuff from a podcast a few months ago that had gone largely overlooked about HIV being created by the government. I mean, just weird.
He said created
stuff.
by Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, weird stuff. And I hope he doesn't get involved in politics when he retires. But I think this whole thing with RFK Jr. from a few weeks ago, the quid pro quo was it gave RFK's candidacy a little bit of a boost from a PR standpoint at a time when nobody was talking about it. And I also think it makes it less jarring when Rodgers makes his inevitable pivot into politics. I just hope that it's with some fringe party and that his thoughts, if his thoughts ever become mainstream, I just say this, I hope I'm dead by then, if his thoughts ever become mainstream.
But Mike, there is a practical question as well. And we can easily say, oh, it's just Aaron Rodgers says silly things about lizard people and about governmental lab conspiracies. And I totally agree with you. I know you've invoked Hanlon's razor before, where it says, you know, never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. I think it's a great thing to hold close in the way you think about the world. But in a locker room, I know Woody Johnson's the owner, but if he's really going to be the most important player on a professional football team and in a locker room, at what point does it matter if he's a complete nutter?
Well, it should matter in New York. Don't we hear all the time about that rough and tumble New York media? I mean, they had treated him with kid gloves from the moment he showed up until the moment his Achilles popped. He never got asked a tough question. For example, are you a 9/11 truther? Because at one point, DeShone Kizer said, when he met Aaron Rodgers, it was the first thing he said to him. One of the first things. Do you believe 9/11 actually happened? Well, you should go read up on that. So he's never been asked any tough questions. And he's the guy who, in his last interview with the press, his last media availability of the 2023 season, went off on this rant about how it has to be all about winning and only focused on winning. Mm-hmm. And we're only going to talk about winning. And it has to be everything about winning and winning and winning. And I know it's the offseason and he's on his own time, but what other quarterback is out there spewing this kind of crap that could create distractions and divisions and issues and something that would take away from this overwhelming and overarching desire to win? So I don't get it. And I don't want to try to psychoanalyze the guy, but I mean, there's just some stuff there that I can't begin to comprehend. And I don't see how it helps the Jets in any way, shape, or form.
But can you imagine if somebody else said that in, say, a pre-draft interview, the consequence that would occur?
Well, and you wonder how long he's been this open with his views and where it all came from and how it all started. On that podcast he did most recently, he spent some time talking about when he was young, he had this intense fear of death because he thought Y2K was going to end the world. So maybe that was in some way the seeds of this, you know, constant mistrust of anything and everything that is under some official shield of governmental action or governmental policy. I don't know, but it's just a hell of a way to live. If you're constantly, you know, there's a certain amount, what, ignorance is bliss. There's a certain amount of comfort that comes from being gullible. You just live your life. If you're constantly looking for every single thing you encounter, I mean, I think I have a pretty good crap filter when someone's trying to feed me a line of BS. I don't assume everything is BS. I assume it is when there are certain things that make that filter activate and make the lights start flashing in my brain that this might be BS. He just thinks everything is. It's just an exhausting way to live.
Mike, how do you think Detroit's going to handle being the home of the draft?
I think it'll be great. I think it'd be great. You know, this is the discovery of plutonium by accident that happened a decade ago when the NFL, which had the draft every year, forever, at Radio City Music Hall, there was a conflict. So they said, well, the hell with you, Radio City Music Hall. We'll take it on the road. And they go to Chicago, and it's great. And they go to Philadelphia, and it's even better. And now it's every year, every year, every year. And every city is eventually going to get its opportunity because it's, you know, at a time of the year where you don't have to worry about weather. And I think Detroit's going to be great, and the next one will be great, and the next one will be great. And this is one of the reasons why the draft is never going away. As much as I don't like the concept of telling a 22-year-old professional, you don't get to pick where you work, you don't get to pick where you live, you don't get to pick who you work for, you're going to be drafted into this industry that has 32 distinct companies, it's never going away, because this thing that's happening next week is its own reality apart from football season. And it's amazing. It's the selling of hope, and it's completely disconnected from the playing of games. And it's that one massive thing that happens in the non-playing season that can never change and will never change as far as the NFL's around in our sports consciousness.
It's kind of cool, too, because there are clearly going to be some cities that will never get a chance to host the Super Bowl, but they'll get a chance to host the draft, so it allows a big NFL event in cities where maybe an NFL event only would happen if your team is that good.
Oh, absolutely. Pittsburgh, case in point. Every once in a while, there's noise about Pittsburgh trying to host a Super Bowl. They don't have the infrastructure to absorb the number of people that show up for Super Bowl week. Las Vegas,
and that field is trash, too.
That infrastructure. What's that?
And that field is trash.
Well, that's part of it, too. And you're running the risk of weather. And you know, they got very lucky with Super Bowl 48. Just a day later or a day or two earlier, and they would have been dealing with snow. But yeah, you can host the draft, and Pittsburgh will. They've put in an application to host it, I think, in 27 or 28. And my guess is they're going to get it. And every city eventually will host it. And that takes 3 decades, and then you start it all over again.
You could do Nashville, Tennessee. You could do Jacksonville. And I'm trying to remember some of the Super Bowl experience that we've had. And actually,
they did Nashville, right? Isn't that why everyone was really
upset? Oh, yeah, the Bachelorette party was really upset.
When we did the Super Bowl and covered the Super Bowl in Detroit, a lot of people were having fun with the easy jokes about it and about the weather. I thought they did a great job. I really did. And I thought the idea of a Super Bowl there, people found sort of strange. But when the NFL gets involved, it's whatever they want to make it.
Indianapolis was awesome, too. You know, it's part of the deal for giving public money to build a stadium. As long as it's enclosed in one of these cold weather cities, you've never heard of Indianapolis being back in the rotation. But that will continue. You'll have that new stadium. You get a Super Bowl. We'll carve it out 1 year. But the draft, every city at some point, it's coming. And it's going to be a huge deal everywhere it goes. And I think it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Mike Florio, thank you. We'll talk next week.
See you.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Florio. We will turn our attention to the NBA next with Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell.
Oh, now?
Yes.
Okay, not last hour.
Correct.
Oh,
time zones.
I see. Reading.
One of the texters referred to you as Layla Schlereth.
East Coast time.
Just trying to figure out.
He's on mountain.
Time zone.
Do you know what happened? I got confused because I saw Florio's name and then Friedell on our rundown, and I was like, oh, 11:25. No.
Dawn threw everything off, but it was worth it.
I could listen to that woman talk for hours.
Yeah, and if you want to go back and listen to that, you really should, because we don't get opportunities to talk to legends all the time.
Dawn so Staley.
Use the Odyssey app to go back and use the rewind feature to enjoy all that she had. We can actually take out the Cylon interruptions on the rewind.
Yeah, but we found out that it wasn't the Cylons.
It was the cheek.
It was face.
I hate that. Like, I hold my phone up to my head, and I hate that. I can't ever listen to a flipping voicemail anymore because you can't hold the speaker up to your ear. It stops playing because you've held the speaker up to your ear. Make it make sense, engineers.
That's Layla Rahimi in on the Bernstein and Holmes show here on this Wednesday. Nick Friedell next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I think it's something that you have to do it. Like, win or go home, that's our mentality. That's the mentality we have to have. Being at home, we're going to have our fans behind us. And we got to just go out there and just take it every possession at a time. And like I said, not being afraid of the fact that it's win or go home, not being timid, but really just embracing it, having fun, like putting it all out there. Everything you have, 48 minutes, collectively, together, on both ends of the floor, and then live with the results.
Ayo Dosunmu, we presume he's giving it a go at shoot-around, trying to see if he can sprint full-on with that bruised quad that has him missing the last four games. He's been limited in practice. Saw a little video of him yesterday, but he has been the Trae Young stopper, and you'd love to have him do that while deploying Alex Caruso to try to stop somebody else. On the line now is Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell. Insider calls are brought to you by the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, equipped for adventure. He's on Twitter at Nick Friedell. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. What's up, Nick?
Oh, guys, it's Bulls, Hawks, and a play-in. Let's get excited.
Trying.
I knew you were gonna
pumped up.
I knew you were gonna have that attitude, and I don't quite know how to classify all of this except for a couple of truths, Nick. Number one, players get hyped for tournaments. We see it happen all the time. I loved the play-in games last year because I also get hyped for tournaments. But the other thing is, part of the reason I think the NBA is doing this, maybe it's not for the Eastern Conference teams so much, given their records that got them in. But the West, you have so much talent. I think it's also why they decided to expand the postseason awards, is because you have so much talent. You should acknowledge it somehow. And last night was a great example of how cruel it could be.
Layla, I'm with you, but it's something that I feel even stronger about now that I am not day-to-day around the games the way I used to. This year, when Steph and LeBron finally leave, I think the NBA is going to have a real problem, because we can get hyped up to see the Lakers in a play-in. Hey, LeBron's into it. Zion was playing great before he got hurt right at the end there. And then we saw the Kings just dominate Steph and the Warriors. But I don't think a lot of people outside of the markets in which those teams exist are going to care nearly as much about a play-in if Steph and LeBron aren't involved. I mean, let's take Bulls Hawks. I don't even know how many people in Chicago are really that invested into what's going on. And certainly in Atlanta, I mean, they've been trying to fill that arena for years. Trae Young is not the guy that is going to help elevate them to some next level. But the point on a larger scale for the league is the play-in looks very good when you have your forward-facing stars that everybody's known for almost two decades at this point. The play-in is not going to be as great down the line if you're looking at somebody like the Utah Jazz playing the Kings. People are going to go, it's nice. And to your point, the players are going to get hyped up A little bit, but is that going to draw in the casual fan who may not pick up basketball the same way?
As someone who was around a lot of winning with Golden State, what was it like? What feelings do you have right now watching what's happened over the last 2 years and how it seemingly feels like that was the end of it last night?
Lawrence, the truth is the team we saw last year and the team that we saw last night, that's the team I thought I was leaving 3 years ago when I went from San Francisco to Brooklyn to cover the Nets with KD and Harden and Kyrie, because I didn't think the Warriors had it in them in any way to go and win that bonus title the way they did a few years ago when Steph went crazy and he beat the Celtics in the finals. Andrew Wiggins was playing the best basketball of his career. I say all that in context because I know a lot of people are now saying, it's over for the Warriors. I don't see it happening for them. I actually think that they still have a chance, and a chance maybe not to get to a finals again, but a chance to be really, really good still, because Steph is still at that level. And we know that he takes care of his body. He's going to still have a year, maybe two left, at close to the level he's at. So if you have Steph and you have Draymond, we'll see what happens with Klay. I would think that Wiggins would be one of the first guys that they're looking to move, depending on what they can get back. I don't think the window has closed on the Warriors as a team that you're really going to focus on. I just don't believe that they're going to reach back up to the top. And when you miss on James Wiseman as the number two pick, that takes years for teams to get over, and I think they're just starting to feel that now.
I laughed last night when I saw the screenshot of the TNT graphic upcoming national TV schedule, and there's LeBron on one side, and the two box on the left is what they put as tomorrow on ESPN. They've got the 7 o'clock game, and there you see Joel Embiid, and then the 9:30 game, and there's Trae Young and Zach LaVine. They put a picture of Zach LaVine up as representing the Bulls. And you talk about...
He won't be playing.
You talk about the relative difference in these play-ins, and you talk about who the forward-facing stars are. Like, how can that happen?
Dan, what's worse is not only did they do it in the beginning, I guess in the first half, I saw... Will Gottlieb had tweeted out the graphic that you're describing. There's like a minute left in Lakers Pelicans, and here comes Zach LaVine again. I'm thinking to myself, there isn't one person who saw this in the truck who could throw a DeMar DeRozan picture up there. I mean, really, there's nobody else that you could put up as that star of the Bulls. But to me, on top of it was a laughable mistake. It's another reminder of truly how far away the Bulls are, because you cannot be a serious franchise with a team that is discussing, we can get right back up there and we can make a push in the East with no face star that people care about night to night. And it was my biggest knock on acquiring LaVine in the first place, then re-signing him again to this ridiculous max deal that they have him on. It's why I laugh when people say, you've got to re-sign DeRozan. For what? Like, you're in the 9-10 game. Like, what difference is DeMar DeRozan going to make on a team that's going nowhere already? You desperately need to find a star and or draft a star and develop them. The Bulls haven't done that. They haven't been able to do that for years. There are all kinds of reasons why they are where they're at. But if you're the Chicago Bulls, you should always have that name brand star that you can count on. And when I saw that graphic that you mentioned, that's all I kept thinking. They still don't even have that guy that they can start to build around.
Well, Nick, you bring up other points. To me, the huge direction symbol of how you knew this team was going to go was when Vooch got re-signed, because everything revolves around him. And then you see for the third year in a row, the Bulls didn't make a trade at the deadline. And they're the only team 3 years running that hasn't done that. When you saw that, what did you think? Because we were talking to you then at the time, but I know you made an observation and probably had an opinion because they seem very confident in this group being this group.
Layla, it's laughable. I mean, the Bulls right now within the NBA are irrelevant. They are completely irrelevant. I wouldn't go as far to say they're a joke because there are plenty of teams that would like to have the big playoff gate that I know Bulls fans have laughed about going into tonight. But, I mean, that's another problem. You've got a game that a lot of fans just don't even care about. As of a few days ago, I know that game wasn't sold out. I figured they'd be comping a lot more tickets to get butts in the seats. But the reality is when you make decisions that people aren't that excited about to begin with, and then you're running back the same players to keep that team intact, you get what you get. And the Bulls, for years now, have always made these decisions where they're just good enough to get on the same level where they're at. And that's the part that just stuns me, having covered that team from so long and now watching it from more of a distance. This is what they wanted to avoid. They didn't want to be the team that was right there in the middle and just stuck. And guess what? They are completely stuck. I mean, I laugh when people say, oh, well, if you just fired Karnisovas and Eversley and you bring in somebody else, I've heard Bob Myers' name popped out from some of the fan base. Bob Myers isn't a miracle worker. I mean, look at this team. Look at the contracts that are on the books. Look at the draft decisions that have been made. They are years away from getting back to a point where they are respectable and pushing towards something in the Eastern Conference. They're just poorly constructed. And when that happens and you allow it to fester, and that's why if you're a Bulls fan, I'd be so angry at Mike Reinsdorf and the decisions that led to this point, because you're allowing mediocrity to reign. And this team is stuck in the middle of mediocrity, and they're going nowhere very fast. And watching the same product and the same result year after year is like watching a bad rerun of Groundhog Day.
Insider calls are brought to you by the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, equipped for adventure with capable features like available H-Track all-wheel drive and standard third-row seating. We're talking with Nick Friedel, Odyssey NBA insider. You know, the other aspect of this that you didn't even mention, the more I'm looking at this year's draft, and the more I'm hearing people talk about it, it kind of sucks.
And you can take kind out of that sentence. I mean, it's really bad. When you start talking to the people that cover the draft and the people that are not only covering the college game, but as we know, there's so many prospects, whether it's internationally or coming from these different leagues that have popped up over the last few years, it's awful. So to think that you're going to get some sort of prospect that's going to come in and make a big difference right away, that's not going to happen. What you have to hope is that you pick up a prospect or two and you're able to develop them over the next few years. But any Bulls fan listening to that sentence is going to sit there and shake their head and laugh. I mean, that is where the Bulls have had their biggest issues recently. You can get all the picks you want and you can draft whomever you'd like. But if you're not getting them to a point where they're feeling comfortable in your system and they're providing the dividends that you'd like to see, it doesn't really matter. And that's, of course, on the coaching staff, but even more certainly with the Bulls in this recent iteration, that's on the front office. You're not taking the right guys, and those guys aren't becoming the players that you need. And you back a few years, I mean, Markkanen is the perfect example. The Bulls thought he was the guy. They were committed to him. They believed in him. They couldn't get it to work in Chicago. He goes to Cleveland, then he goes to Utah. Now he's an all-star. I mean, there are plenty of examples of what's gone on. You look at Wagner in Orlando. I mean, they could have had him. He looks like he's going to be a hell of a player, but they wanted a veteran in Vucevic. That was not the right move. And Dan, this goes back to what we were just saying. Wasn't the right move to re-sign him either. So it's not hard to figure out where they're at because of the choices that they made. But to the point about the draft, I don't think, again, the casual NBA fans are understanding just how bad it is supposed to be in the next couple months here. This is an awful, awful draft, and there are not a lot of ready-made prospects available.
Nick, as always, man, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
You got it, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Nick.
That was Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell. Insider calls are brought to you by the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, equipped for adventure.
I don't know what's happening outside. Lawrence looked, and I'm scared, and I
Yeah, you both looked, and then I thought I'm missing something, and I thought Not Dead Guy was out there.
No,
again.
I just keep watching for rain, but there is no just rain windy. In the forecast.
Just windy.
Oh, yeah, there was enough of a window, I guess, to decide on a White Sox doubleheader today.
They probably should have played yesterday.
No, because there were a bunch of bands coming through.
But it didn't.
Okay, here's a funny story, is that I was intending on doing some yard work yesterday. I was intending
to
weeding and, you know, getting ready to plant the basil and some stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. And then I get home and I took an hour-long nap, and then it's raining. I'm like, damn it, now it throws everything off, and I can't do the stuff I want to do. And I just when I got the alert that the White Sox game was canceled, the sun came out.
Yes.
And I looked at the radar.
I got a rainbow yesterday.
I looked at the radar and I said,
what does it mean? Rainbow.
And I said, this might work out just fine.
Yeah. I was driving around at 7 o'clock and I was like, oh, there.
And I did.
They could have played.
I went outside between like 6:30 and 7:15. I did the yard work I needed to do and everything was fine. And then it started raining.
But
later.
Maybe they looked at it and said,
field condition, there's perhaps.
No. Because that feels
there's
fine. And there
coming.
Was and there wasn't a lot of water.
Maybe
like
they
that's
ran out
the
of
thing.
Milkshakes.
Maybe they looked at it and said, percentage wise, there's a better chance of us winning a game in the doubleheader than it's true.
And
I know
Kansas
it is.
City's like
it's
dead.
True.
It is because most doubleheaders are split.
Right.
Also, guys, did you see the Cubs lineup?
No.
I saw Master Bonies and left.
Yeah, that was my thought. Was that's interesting.
Interesting.
Ian Happ is DH.
Meaning...
the decision that was made.
Maybe he just needed a day off his feet. Like that's usually how I look at DH. Like day game after a night game that went long, travel day, get off your feet and just hit four times.
So you have Mastroboni and Talkman as your corner outfielder?
Yeah, I just wish
Talkman's been pretty good out right.
Yeah. It's just the combination that cracks me up.
Well, it's just that Mastroboni's not a major league player. That's the problem I have, is that he's not good. But I guess you got to play, guys. Today, the Cubs finished their road trip against the Diamondbacks. Pre-game coverage 2:05, first pitch 2:40. Then later, the Bulls take on the Hawks at United Center in the NBA play-in tournament.
You know you're going to like it and watch it.
Of course I'm going to watch it. Okay, we already got plans. We got a whole setup, everything. Pre-game coverage begins at 8:15, tip-off 8:30. The only local broadcast of the game can be heard on 670 The Score and in Chicagoland on the free Odyssey app. When we come back, you will be amazed to hear the number of sets of eyes that were on the WNBA draft, and then the response that some people had when it was publicized what WNBA players actually make. There were people who were new to all of this excitement and thinking, wait, what? That can't be right. That's missing a zero. No, it's not. We'll discuss next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
With the first pick in the 2024 WNBA draft, the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
Well, that's a shock. Who saw that coming? So we'll see if the WNBA can invest, if individual teams can invest, and if at some point these shockingly low salaries will be at the point where actual livings can be made without, I don't know, having to go to Russia to supplement one's income, for example.
There it is. That's why I'm so surprised by this. Do you think that players would go play in other leagues in their off seasons when they're supposed to be resting because they want to?
I mean, I'm sure there's probably a couple that are like, oh, well, this is a fun experience and sure. I get to live in Spain. Or
like, for example, Caribbean League, you know, in baseball. Yeah. But but winter leagues. But in this case,
but in Russia, and part of the draw to Russia is how much money they pay. Like it's not just an extra paycheck that's similar. Brittany Griner got offered a ton of money to go over to Russia and play. You have to pick your spots on where you're going to go, but you can live an awesome life playing overseas in conjunction with playing in the WNBA. But as Layla says, for those athletes that don't want to do that, here's hoping that the growth of women's basketball overall allows for there to be higher salaries and they can take advantage of that. And sure, it's, I mean, we do have to look at it like the WNBA season is only, what, 2.5 months? So if you look at it from that perspective, you go, well, making $75,000 in a couple of months is not terrible. But compared to other sports, the gap is so wide that maybe what we'll see is a high tide lifting all boats as far as salary goes.
Not to mention that you incur risk in some of these overseas contracts, just like the men do, but more so the women who can get preyed on by fly-by-night ownerships, by corrupt Russian ownerships, and you've got Putin-connected oligarchs.
Well, I would say probably, I would imagine that there's probably a State Department edict now saying don't go there.
Right, now, but even in countries outside of Russia,
like the Turkish league, there are
all kinds of leagues where
not exactly a stability filled place.
No, you cash your check. Your check comes, you cash it. If this is not a country whose economy is run in quite the same way or regulated,
but if
the
you're
same
playing
way
in a women's league in France or Spain or Italy or Argentina, like. There's still money to be had. I imagine if Camila Cardoso wanted to go home and play in Brazil, that she would get broke off a piece going home. Russia, for sure, should be off of everybody's list.
Well, and we bring this up because of not just the salaries, but also what is the proven way to increase player salary? It is a TV contract. It's TV rights. For everybody who's like, oh, if you like women's basketball that's so much, why don't you go to the games, buy tickets? People buy tickets. People go to the games. The attendance is not the major driver of player salary. You're seeing that with the ratings. And we saw it with the ratings for the WNBA draft. The NFL got 6 million viewers for their draft last year. The NBA had 3.74. A lot of people speculate it's going to be worse this year because of what we just talked about with Nick Friedell. It's not as good of a draft. The WNBA had 2.5 million. There's a reason I asked Dawn Staley about the importance of investing in your players and your coaches.
The first salary that Caitlin Clark is going to make, you probably know the number. Do you know what,
Jonas? 73 something?
$76,000 change.
$76,000. And we always talk about, well, these athletes make too much money. And I would say, look, no, they don't. They're the best in the world at what they do.
And they should be grateful.
There's a premium paid when you are one of the best in the world at what you do. And that goes the same for an eye surgeon or for an actor or for a singer or a dancer. And then you look, I just did a Google search for jobs that pay $76,000. You're talking about Caitlin Clark, who is one of the best in the world at what she does. And she makes the same as this job, for example, a CDLA truck driver would earn that working in Faison, North Carolina. A gutter cleaning tech in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm not going to name the company, but would be able to earn that. And the disparity.
Working year round, though.
Working year round and still working in the top league for what you do to be one of the best in the world at what you do. There's a massive discrepancy.
So maybe we will see. That's what's going to be interesting, because I do think that Caitlin Clark is going to bring numbers, like Dawn was talking about. She's going to bring numbers. Obviously, the arenas are going to be filled every time that she plays, home or away. Now it's a matter of, can that momentum carry into the summer? Will people choose to watch a couple more Sky games this year than they did last year? Or maybe even go to a couple of Sky games because they're interested in Camila Cardoso and Angel Reese. The television contract is huge. And if they can sustain a larger number of viewership, then they're going to get more money. It's going to be revenue shared and salaries will hopefully go up. That's the type of growth that Dawn's talking about, that Caitlin Clark's talking about, that anyone who is invested, whether we mean figuratively or literally, in the WNBA is hoping happens, so that there isn't this rush to, I've got to go overseas just to kind of make ends meet. And then you put, in the case of Russia and maybe China, like you're putting yourself in, you're taking a risk that you don't necessarily have to take. You should want to play in another league because it's a cool experience.
Like guys who play winter ball. Baseball players like, yeah, I'm going to go home either to my home country or I'm going to go with a buddy and go play in the Dominican Republic or Venezuela. It's supposed to be fun.
And there's a bunch of international players that got drafted in the W this year that have opportunities to, whether it's go back home or wherever and go play. It should be a globally celebrated thing. And if you could go make your money in Costa Rica or wherever, go make it.
And frankly, the reason we're bringing this up is because we are used to talking about hundreds of million-dollar contracts, except the White Sox. We are used to talking about max deals for players. We consume it the same. We take it seriously in the same way. And that's where the disconnect, I think, really shows.
Well, the part is that I found really interesting is that there were so many new people involved in this that when they got to the breakdown, I saw a breakdown on Instagram yesterday where this one was like, wait, she's gonna make how much? And people don't know because they haven't been following. So it was a rude awakening for them. It was in some cases, like a call to action of, well, why is there this injustice?
Well, then the economic splainers come out and say, well, they don't make money and not enough people are interested and you don't know economics. And a lot of it is, it's a leading indicator, not a lagging indicator. And that's why what I've been pounding on this whole thing is the amount of money that needs to be invested because of the money to be made. And they've got to do that. The chance is here to strike. And without that understanding, without the infrastructure and the public relations, the fan recruiting to explain to them what's going on right now in the basketball culture, the overlap between WNBA and NBA, what's going on with apparel and shoes and everything. Tell people. Let people, like, everybody is waiting at the doorstep for the first time in a long time, me included. I never liked watching women's basketball until I started understanding it a little better and appreciating it and being able to calibrate what my expectations were.
It's also about corporate money, too. Let's face it. It's corporate money. It's sponsoring the leagues. But your kids care about Caitlin Clark.
Absolutely.
And they're not necessarily watching baseball.
I never seen my wife sit down and sit in front of the TV and scream at the TV for a whole pro basketball or a whole college basketball.
Have you seen her scream about a Billy Donovan press conference? Because that's what we're going to do next.
That was just me
here on the score.